All right, everyone, you are in time for a very, very great conversation that I have with two beautiful ladies, Miss Elizabeth Lamax and Miss Andrea Baisley Miller. They spoke with me about a very important topic, very important to our community. And when I say our community, I'm talking about on the local, state, national, and international levels. I want to let you know that by mistake, for the first segment, I had a simulcast running underneath our conversation. You'll probably be able to hear some of that in the background, but fortunately, you're able to easily hear our guests speaking with me. And so I decided to go ahead and run this anyway. So here's that conversation. On a beautiful Monday afternoon, welcome to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr. Were you in time to hear me speaking with two lovely ladies about a topic that is so important in our day? We're starting it off with Miss Gloria Gaynor, as you heard, rather than with our theme song, I want you to listen to the power of the words. Weren't you the one who tried to hurt me with your fire? Did you think I'd crumble? Did you think I'd lay down and die? Oh, no, not I will survive. Oh, as long as I know how to love, I know I'll be alive. I've got all my life to live, and I've got all my love to give, and I'll survive. I will survive. I will survive.
I will survive. That's what it's about. No matter what life throws at me, we will survive. How many of you have found yourselves saying to yourself, I will survive? Well, here to join me to talk about that very thing, surviving, is Miss Andrea Baisley Miller. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Good to have you in the house with us today. Appreciate
you
so much.
Thank you for having us. We're very appreciative of the time that you're giving us.
My pleasure. And if you would do the honor, since you and I kind of met initially, and you brought another beautiful guest with you, if you would do the honors and introduce her to us.
Of course. I have with me today Elizabeth Lamax, who is a member of our organization, the Cumbie Center. Elizabeth is our Edgefield case manager. She is also part of the sexual assault response team. And Elizabeth also does a lot of education efforts, both in Edgefield County and Aiken County as well. So she is she makes us very lucky to have her. I'll say that.
And tell us a little bit more about yourself. I introduced you by name, but I didn't say much about what you do, where you're working. You mentioned Cumbie Center. Yeah. Tell us more.
Of course. So what I do at the Cumbie Center is I am the community education coordinator, which is very fancy for basically I go out and I do a lot of educating on healthy relationship building with, I like to say, kids of all ages. So that's kids to adults. And we talk a lot about how to build a healthy relationship. What we've found when we are working with abuse is that telling someone to not abuse is not helpful. So we do a lot of what we call prevention education. So we look at the reasons why someone feels like it's okay to hurt someone else, and then we educate on those. For instance, if someone is angry, we talk about healthy communication strategies. If someone doesn't understand consent, then we talk about bullying. So we'll basically scale it to whatever age group that we're talking to. You know, teenagers are going to have a much better idea of what consent is in some cases, so we won't have to necessarily talk about bullying with them, but we do talk about how do you build a boundary? What's a boundary? What does that look like? Do you have a boundary? And so we are able to really kind of craft these conversations that make it personal for the groups that we're talking to. So it's not about Elizabeth and I coming into a room and saying, these are all the things that you need to do. It's where do you stand on all of these things?
How, interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So do you find that people are ready to open up and say, well, this is where I stand on this issue, this is where I stand on that item, or do you have to really work hard to pull that out of them?
It depends on the group, I think. I think with the way that we do groups, Elizabeth and I are fortunate enough to have places that want us to come back more than one time, which means I think we're doing something right,
yeah,
at least. So if we're able to kind of build a rapport with the group, they get more open with us and more honest. But a lot of times people try to lead with their best foot forward or what they think is their best foot forward. And so we'll see a lot of times like that, you know, I have no idea what you're talking about. Or of course, I'm like a perfect person, you know, so it can take them a little while to be honest with themselves more than just honest to us. So
let me ask you this. We're talking about building relationships. Of course, that has to do also with what we do that can tear relationships apart.
Yes.
Are we looking at physical abuse? Are we looking at emotional abuse?
We are looking at the full spectrum. So abuse, a lot of times people, one of the things that we ask when we're talking about like dating violence or domestic violence, a good question that we like to ask is, you know, what's the first thing that you think of when you hear the words domestic violence or dating violence? And usually everyone's like, oh, bruises, right? Some kind of physical aspect of abuse. But a lot of times, I would say, not to diminish physical abuse at all, but some of the other parts of abuse can be even more long-lasting to heal from, and that's the spiritual side of it, emotional side of it, the financial, psychological side of it. So we do talk about all of that.
So that being the case, and ladies and gentlemen, all we're doing right now is just deliberately laying the foundation. As we look at the way these relationships build or fall apart, whichever way you want to look at it, when abuse is part of the equation, are we finding that certainly bruises is what often comes to people's minds first? And of course, when we think bruises first, we think male perpetrators.
Yes.
What are you finding when it comes to the prevalence of abuse? Is it, I know you mentioned that psychological, emotional, financial is part of the picture too. Are we finding that women may be perpetrators more than we would have anticipated or expected?
Very much so. And that's a very common misconception when we think of domestic violence, is it's a male on female type situation, because that's kind of what culture has formed our minds to think. I will say that as in a female being the perpetrator of abuse, females tend to be a little bit more lethal, to say, for lack of a better term, meaning that because of the size difference that's there, a lot of times they'll use weapons. So we have women that are picking up bats and beating guys' heads in, or, you know, whatever that may look like. It's often more deadly when a female is the perpetrator. And domestic violence is so important to understand. It's not like a human entity. It does not discriminate. We see it from the richest neighborhoods in our area to the lowest income areas. It does not discriminate whatsoever. So
you mentioned from the richest to the poorest, so I imagine any ethnicity.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a huge question that we always get a lot of. And people are always surprised because they want us to sway and answer a certain way oftentimes. But we never know who's going to walk through our door, no matter what shade their skin tone is, no matter how they wear their hair, who they love, who they choose to be in a relationship with, what they, you know, have on their criminal records. It doesn't matter. They're all going to be treated the same way at the Cumbie Center. We're going to make sure that whatever it is that they are going through is validated, that we hear their story, we believe them. The person, and I always like to tell victims that we see, is we never know what side of the desk that we're going to be sitting on, meaning I could easily make a different move in my life and be on that other side where that victim is. And it's a humbling thing that I speak for most of us, we have to remind ourselves of that daily, is you don't know where these folks have been from, or, you know, what they've come from. All we can do is help guide them to a safer future.
Yeah. Well, let me ask about this group. Also, when we think about abuse, violence, for many of us, it is so easy to automatically think about violence taking place within the heterosexual relationship.
Yes.
How about in the homosexual relationship?
Yes, definitely. And I think, unfortunately, there are less avenues, at least known avenues for assistance when it's a homosexual relationship, mainly for a lot of different reasons. I think sometimes there's mental stigmas, like no one's going to believe me. They're not going to want to help me. There's other situations where maybe they're not out yet and it's not a known thing and they don't want to seek help because if they do, they're going to have to basically out themselves, especially if they're trying to get prosecution and things like that. But it doesn't, like Elizabeth was saying, you know, with skin tone, it doesn't discriminate with relationship type either. And unfortunately, I think that's kind of a barrier for them in a way to, you know, am I going to be listened to? Am I going to be believed? Are they just going to see me as this, you know? And so we help anyone who walks in our door. Does not matter.
And you mentioned the fact that there's some reluctance on the part of the homosexual to say, look, this is what's going on in my life.
Yeah.
Do you find that also when the male is the victim of the violence, that men tend to be more reluctant to admit, hey, I'm getting beat up, or are they able to just say, hey, look, this is what's happening to me?
Oh, absolutely. I think culture has taught us, that's something that Andrea and I work very, very hard with our prevention education is talking about masculinity. What is that? What does it mean when you're told your whole life as a male to man up, that you can't cry, that you can't show emotion? What is that teaching our young men, you know? And so, of course, when you're growing up in this environment where you're not supposed to show any emotion because that means that your man card is going to be redacted, and you're admitting now that someone of, you know, usually smaller stature, a female, is beating up on you, is, you know, harming you, that, you know, that takes a strike at your man card, you know, because of what society has told you. And it's really unfortunate. We do see a very large group of male survivors, as a matter of fact. We know that there are more, and we know that they are out there. And I just, if I could reiterate something to all young boys, men of all ages, is that you deserve respect just like anyone else. No matter what you were taught from the time you were born, you are worthy of respect and love and to be treated like a human.
I appreciate that so much. And you're right. We're taught that big boys don't cry.
Yeah.
Big boys should cry, don't they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, one of the stats out there is that 1 in 6 men will be a survivor of child sexual abuse before the age of 18. So if you know, we have more than 6 men on this, like in this county, 1,000% yes. So, you know, there's a lot of people out there, I think, that are kind of holding on to this pain and maybe don't feel like they're going to be believed or heard or listened to. And it's really important for them to know that, even though it's seen as a quote-unquote woman's issue, that sexual violence can happen to anyone, and it's really important to understand that you are believed, you will be heard, you will be listened to if you come through our doors.
Well, we appreciate it. It's the Cumbie Center again, right?
Yes.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I am speaking with Andrea and Elizabeth, and we're talking about violence, and eventually the conversation is going to dovetail into a discussion of sex trafficking and modern day slavery. Stay with us. We'll be right back.